Shrink Wrap Radio number 762, Elizabeth Stunts on using DBT skills to balance uncertainty with hope.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is Elizabeth Cohn Stunts, licensed clinical social worker and psychoanalytic psychotherapist. Along with Dr. Marcia Linehan, the developer of dialectical behavior therapy, she is co-author of the new book, Coping with Cancer, DBT Skills to Manage Your Emotions and Balance Uncertainty with Hope. This groundbreaking book provides much-needed help for anyone who is facing cancer, as well as for the many mental and emotional challenges we all face in these unprecedented times. Now, here's the interview. Elizabeth Cohn Stunts, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thanks. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Well, I'm so happy to have this opportunity to discuss the book that you've co-authored with Dr. Marcia Linehan, Coping with Cancer, DBT Skills to Manage Your Emotions and Balance Uncertainty with Hope. And regular listeners will know that DBT stands for dialectical behavior therapy. So we'll be saying DBT probably more often than we'll be saying dialectical behavior therapy here. And actually, I interviewed your co-author, Dr. Marcia Linehan, way back in 2007. Yeah, she had been studying Zen and other meditative practices.
She's a Zen master.
I don't think she was at the time that I interviewed her in 2007.
She was a Zen student, but she wasn't a Zen master maybe until 13 or 14. Yeah,
well, that's a real accomplishment among her other accomplishments as a person who created DBT, marrying ideas from Zen and other meditative traditions with behavior therapy, which was her background at that point.
Totally.
Yeah. And you're an LCSW, right?
Yep.
And
I'm also psychoanalytically trained and her Zen student.
So that's how the two of you met, her Zen student. Wow.
Yes. Well, first I took a course in DBT and she trained me in DBT.
Okay.
And then she was doing silent meditation retreats twice a year for psychotherapists. And I started doing that with her and studying Zen and the integration of that with psychological thinking. And most of the people that were working with her were DBT trained. And I was DBT trained, but I am also a psychoanalyst. And in one of the retreats, I'm a cancer survivor and have worked a lot on programming issues in cancer programs.
Okay.
And I said to her, so these DBT skills could be great for people living with cancer. Can I try that out? And she's like, go try it. So I went back to a cancer support organization that I was working with, and we tried them both for cancer patients and their loved ones. And people loved them and found them really helpful. And when I went back to Marcia and said, you know, we have to train other people in doing this, she's like, no, we're writing a book on this. So that's how it
So that's
about.
Where the book came from. Yeah.
That's where the book came from.
So you were doing workshops then using the
So we were
DBT?
Doing workshops for patients living with cancer and then separate ones, but really teaching these same skills to their loved ones.
Yes. Now you mentioned...
Yeah,
you mentioned that you're a cancer survivor yourself, and and in the book you go through that some. Maybe you can take our audience through the impact of getting that cancer diagnosis.
Sure, sure. Well, the first thing that is true that we say in the book and is absolutely true is that everybody's unique, and that there are certain general things that many of us go through, but everybody responds uniquely. Some of us are more emotional and some of us are more factual, and we're just going to stick with the facts and be very rational about it. And my own reaction, I was a practicing psychoanalyst. I had been practicing for 30 years when I was diagnosed.
Oh, wow.
I had also been working at a cancer support organization. So my own was like, I got to do this right. And I got to cope. And I got to prove to myself and the rest of the world that I know what I'm doing. So my own reaction, which is not uncommon, is to try to avoid any strong emotions. I'm going to be strong and I'm not going to be scared and I'm not going to be anxious. Of course, that doesn't work. Our emotions always show up.
Yeah.
So mine did too. But one of the beauties of DBT is that we learn that those emotions show up for real and understandable reasons. And there are important messages that we should be paying attention to. The problem
let me just ask, were you already DBT trained at that point?
I was not. So I was absolutely trying to avoid all my emotions. I was not going to be scared. I was not going to be anxious. But I had the common reaction that many of us do of, am I doing this right? And I've got to make sure I'm doing this right. There is no one right or wrong way, but what I have learned is that when we allow those emotions to come up, and don't just totally push them away. But then the beauty of DBT is when they do come up and then they stay longer than is useful or they're more intense than is useful, that there are ways to regulate them and bring them down so that people are less afraid of allowing those emotions like I was when we know that there are ways that they don't have to take us over and they don't have to turn us into a different person and that we can allow strong emotions and still be strong ourselves.
Yeah. You're going into the DBT, but you didn't have a DBT in your corner at that time. So I'm still wanting to understand more about
the impact
on you and how you handled it how it resolved to the extent that it did, et cetera.
So for me, I tried to stay away from the strong emotions, and I was took the most aggressive chemo and taught the night before a very major 12-hour surgery, and I was like, I got this. That morning, the morning of the surgery at 5 a.m. as I was going to the hospital, I was pretty panicked, that's where it showed up for me. And I had said to my sister, she said, oh, you want me to be at the hospital? I was like, I'm going to be in surgery all day. I don't need you there. But that morning I did want her there. And I had my husband call her at 5 a.m. She lived many hours away. and was like, yeah, can you come? And even though I didn't see her all day, it was very important to me to have her there and to know that she was with me. So that as much as I fought it at the end moment, then it was like, oh, wow, I do need some help. And that some of the things that we go into in the book about useful coping ways, I didn't have at the time. For example, one of the things we talk about is the use of humor, and that there's a place for humor. I took it all very seriously, and I talk in the book about ways I didn't cope in an optimal way. And that there are ways of looking also at the lighter side of things that can also be useful, that allowing those emotions can also be useful. So I wish I had DBT skills.
Yeah, well, I wonder if as you went through the DBT training, if there was any sort of reprocessing of that experience.
Not during the initial training. And I think that it was more just a psychological way of understanding that there are skills that we can have that can help us cope. So I guess, well, maybe I'm going to backtrack. I think there was a reprocessing of the experience, that part of the experience that I wanted to kind of, I'm holding my hand up to hold it away.
Yeah.
And that once I knew ways to manage my emotions without being so overwhelmed, I allowed more of the experience. So I think you ask a good question, as I'm sure you do all the time. But
I hope so.
Over time, I probably did reprocess that.
I would think so,
and allow more of my own experience of it, that I had just kept it arm's length for so long.
Yeah. Now, your book is directed primarily to people who have a cancer diagnosis. But who else might benefit from it?
So what we're finding is that loved ones are really finding it very useful. And one of the consistent things that people say to me after they read it is, this is useful for anybody because it's about coping with uncertainty. Right. So, and no surprise, during COVID, I've been asked to speak a ton about it because now the whole world is coping with uncertainty and having to confront that. And a lot of the DBT skills are useful for, they've been researched in all kinds of challenging situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as people read my book, whether they have cancer or not, they're saying, whoa, these are good ways to manage your emotions. These are good ways to make decisions. These are good ways to think about how to live more meaningfully or talk to my loved ones. So it's been very interesting that it's not just people living with cancer that have found it really useful.
Yeah, I wanted to underscore that for our listeners because I'm not sure that all of our listeners are dealing with a cancer diagnosis. But on
Absolutely
the other
not.
Hand, we've all received a frightening diagnosis recently. And I'm referring to the COVID-19 pandemic, which evidently is not over. It's kind of a resurgence. And climate warming, and among all the other distressing developments. So it's really...
Exactly.
So we all have to... It's almost like getting that... I suppose it's not quite as immediate as having a doctor in your face, but, telling you, okay... But people are sure trying to get that point home to us, and I think some of us are getting the point and are frightened.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think for example, with climate change, we have, as a planet, denied it and said, oh, it won't really happen to us, and there really won't be that danger. Certainly with COVID, it brings it home that there is potential danger, but cancer or not, we all are going to have a finite life. And mm-hmm. so that Well, for a cancer person, it's someone who's diagnosed with cancer, it puts it right in our face. But really, when we face the fact that there are some threats in terms of climate, COVID, and how long we're going to live, we actually live more meaningfully and we deal with our lives better. But it's a very painful piece to want to take on. And until we're forced to, we don't do it. We're not focusing on climate change until we're having these terrible wildfires and like, whoa, this is a reality.
Yeah. I'm living near those terrible wildfires.
Absolutely.
I have to tell you.
So you have to face it more than I do in New York. But many of us do what I did with cancer and just kind of hold it at a distance unless we have to. I don't want to be frightened. I don't want to be overwhelmed. And when we know that perhaps facing that, we're going to make some changes about climate change. We're going to make some changes about how we live and how we deal with our loved ones and manage ourselves. Facing that, while difficult, is very helpful. Marcia in DBT calls that radical acceptance.
Right.
Of facing a threat of something that's very scary. But once we do that, we actually can function better, even though who wants to do that?
Right. Well, I want to drill down on some of the key points in your book. And one is managing fear, which you're talking about. So more. And I'm remembering that Lady Gaga has been a spokesman for DBT. So DBT actually has gotten some big publicity, you know, between
people
what she
found
said.
It really helpful.
Yeah. And, you know, and she's out there really letting people know how helpful it's been in managing her fears and anxieties. So more specifically, what are the strategies that you recommend specifically for managing fear?
So we really talk about coping as a way of balancing the four parts of what goes into a psychological reaction. So we think about a psychological reaction as influenced by what happens in our body, what we feel, our emotions, what we think, and the actions we do. So when we're trying to balance, for example, our fear, we think about it like a coping circuit. And when we're overwhelmed, either in our body, our emotions, our thoughts, or our actions, it kind of blows the fuse. So, so what we talk about, it's a version of mindfulness, which is really, you have to look at that coping circuit and pay attention to those four parts. So what's happening in our body? When we get a cancer diagnosis or we're told we have COVID, think about what happens. Our heart rate starts to race. Our breathing gets more rapid. The emotion gets stirred up, fear and anxiety. What's happening right now? And oh my God, what's going to happen in the future? Am I going to die?
Right.
And then there are the thoughts that go with that. What am I going to die? This is terrible. I'm never going to survive. And then there are the actions about whether we go to the doctor, whether we don't, whether we get tested, whether we don't. So when we are trying to manage our fear, we want to balance those four things. So what can we do with our body? What we want to do is bring in other reactions that'll kind of settle it down. So if you think about your racing heart, one of the first things we teach people to do is to take a moment and to take a longer exhale. And because we want to physiologically slow down that racing heart. So we teach people that they'll, for example, inhale to a count of four and then take a slower, longer exhale to the count of six. We teach people to do body scans to relax tense muscles. And we also teach people to get hugs. There's actually research that a 20-second hug physiologically lowers people's stress and anxiety. So there are practical ways to change your body and balance that out. So then the emotion, okay? So the emotion is fear and panic. Physiologically, what we've learned, and the expression is name it to tame it. Just saying, I'm frightened, I'm scared, I feel panic. Naming that has shown to physiologically calm the emotion. So
name
that's
it
really
to tame
important.
It. Yeah.
Name
I like
it
that.
To tame it. That's yeah. That's the neuroscience expression. So we teach them to label what they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And there's been research with cancer patients who can label their emotions, cope much better. Okay, so next is the thoughts. To pay attention to what we're thinking and to say, whoa, is that something that I know to be true? What we often do is get way ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
I'm going to die. This is going to be a disaster. And we tell ourselves all kinds of things that may or may not be true and may get us more anxious than we already were. So Marcia has a great DBT skill, and she calls it check the facts, to go back and say to our doctor, whoa, what are the likelihood that that's true? And also in our thoughts to focus as much as we can on what's happening right now, something that's happening in the present, because with cancer, with COVID, with climate change, all of these uncertain things, we go ahead and deal with things that are in the future that we can't know whether they're true. And so saying, whoa, am I focusing on what's happening right now? Or am I telling myself stories that I don't know whether they're true or not?
Yeah, it's easy in terms of the climate change and COVID and so on, to trip out to visions of rioting in the streets, the total collapse of human services, people invading your house with guns, you know, to get your food or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The mind just goes riot to a doomsday kind of scenario. And we've had plenty of movies to show us just how bad it could be, actual films, you know, so we've got those films in our head somewhere.
That's right. So if we pause and take a moment and step back and look at what we're thinking, and, you know, when I said looking at that circuit board, we're looking at, okay, what's happening to my body? And when your body is more anxious, that keeps those thoughts going and it keeps uh-huh. those emotions going. So if you have ways to balance what's happening in your body, you're labeling that emotion, that's bringing it down. And then you're looking more carefully at your thoughts and saying, wait a minute, what other facts am I overlooking? The D of dialectic, D of DBT stands for dialectics. So what does that mean? It means that two things that seem to be opposite can both be true. So in my case, remember I told you I was so worried that I'd be weak if I allowed my emotions. The truth is we can be strong and weak at the same time. We can be terrified of cancer, COVID, climate change, and have hope at the same time. Desmond Tutu says that hope is just remembering that light exists at dark times. And think about it, in a dark time, at a dark night, the sun always comes up the next day. So remembering to rebalance the thought and add in that seemingly opposite side that's also positive. Now, I want to stop here for a minute. I'm not just saying, look at the bright side, right? That cancer, COVID, climate change, those are real scary things. So I'm not just saying, look at the bright side of that. I'm talking about a seesaw, and I'm saying rebalance it so you're not just stuck on the negative side. Validate that those negative thoughts are there for real and understandable reasons, but you want to balance it out by also adding the positives to it. What else is true in this case? What have I overlooked in this situation? And balancing that in. Does that make some sense?
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
So that's part of the way that we balance our thoughts and we balance our actions. So remember I said to you before about that for me, I took things way too seriously. What I later learned with DBT is if I also could allow some jokes and some humor, that that balances the over panic and that there's a place for that. I'm not suggesting that we just make jokes about cancer or COVID or climate change, but there's a place for that to be balanced in. When we're actually feeling so terrible, it's really hard to appreciate the positive parts of life when we have cancer, when we have COVID. But the truth is, it can be worth our while that when we can balance in some gratitude for the positive parts of life that do remain, the sun that's shining today, that our partner doesn't have COVID the same time we do, whatever, you know, that I got a good, nice meal, or my sense of smell is coming back, or whatever it is, that people do much better when they can balance in those seemingly other sides.
Yeah, well,
does that
even
make sense?
Gratitude that you've had a good enough life up to this point that you are
totally
fearful of losing it.
Absolutely.
Or of losing your lifestyle or whatever, at least.
That you're minimizing or overlooking, to bringing those things in now. And again, not to invalidate how frightening and terrible things are, but just to rebalance it. It's not to just think of the positive, but balancing the positive and the negative.
Yeah. In terms of taking actions, and again, I'm thinking of things like fires and global warming and COVID. Mm-hmm. What are the actions that an individual can do when they find themselves swimming in all the anxiety of those things possibly happening?
So when we're feeling so helpless, right, and we say overwhelming things, thinking about the things in our own life and even in the world, even if we're not saving the whole planet, places that we can do things that'll make us feel less helpless. Having a wonderful podcast where we're educating other people about the dangers, right? So you have ways that you're taking action and not just being so helpless.
Yeah,
right?
I do look at it that way too.
Yes, as well you should. So developing some mastery and say, I'm not completely helpless. There are ways, large and small, and they can be small ways that also I'm not helpless and I can change things. We actually say to people that learning DBT skills and learning ways to cope with things when you're overwhelmed is a way to both accept your feeling and make changes in how you want to cope. So that you can be frightened and learn new ways to do things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so humor is another way to bring humor, or gratitude. People keep a gratitude journal. And again, that's harder to do when you're very sick, but the research has shown it's worth people's while.
Those steps in. And a lot of the work that you've done has been in groups. So I would think that it might be important to find ways to find other people that are, you know, more or less on the same page. Yeah, connecting to other people.
Totally. The other action that we talk about is something that we call compassionate self-talk, because one of the common reactions with cancer, with COVID, even with climate change, is self-doubt. Am I doing this right? Am I doing enough? And feeling so isolated. So compassionate self-talk is really talking to yourself in the same caring way that you would to a friend or talking, we like to say like a benevolent grandmother would, somebody who loves you and cares about you and believes in you. And also saying, reminding yourself, other people are frightened of cancer, COVID, climate change, just like me. Other people are frightened just like me. And reminding oneself that we're not so alone, and being gentler with each other. And there's all kinds of research on self-compassion and where that helps. And then, as you said, reaching out to other people who are dealing with COVID, who are living with cancer, who are the loved ones of people with cancer, who are just like me, frightened, and can support me, and I can support them, and realizing the difference you can make for other people in sharing your story and how you're coping.
Yeah, and also there are exciting role models out there who,
absolutely,
you know, who you learn about that they're doing amazing things in terms of either activism or spreading joy or calling attention to a bigger picture. And
absolutely.
And we can draw strength from people like that, as you mentioned, and Desmond Tutu.
Right. But we can draw strength from the big characters out there and also the little ones like us, the person who's our neighbor and who has a kind word, or who is noticing the beautiful sunset and getting us to slow down and appreciate what's in front of us, no matter how long we're going to live, no matter how long we're going to live from cancer or COVID or climate change, that it might be Desmond Tutu or the Pope that's inspiring us, but it also might be the lady next door who's tending our garden and enjoying her life no matter how long she's going to live, and to slow down enough to appreciate the lessons from people like that as well, and to realize that we have lessons to give other people. You do because you have a microphone and educate so many of us, but in large and small ways, we all can do that. And seeing that we don't all have to be Desmond Tutu, to really be making a difference, and somebody that's worth learning from.
Yeah, yeah. You also talk about living meaningfully, and take us through that a bit, if you will.
Absolutely. So it's what I was talking about before when I said that DBT uses, Marsha uses this term, radical acceptance. Radical acceptance is facing a difficult challenge. And I was talking before about how difficult it is to accept that we have cancer, that we have COVID, that there's a threat of not living as long as we had hoped or imagined. One of the difficult gifts of cancer and of COVID, and Charles Blow wrote about this beautifully in an op-ed on the New York Times, that when we face, and it comes right in our face, the reality of not living as long as we hoped or imagined, many of us decide to slow down and live more meaningfully. That at that time, we start to value the people that are most important to us. We think about how we're living and how we want to live for as long as we have. And for some of us, it may be for a very long lifetime, in some way, maybe short. But when we realize and really face the idea that our days may be numbered, we choose to make decisions about who we want to spend our time with and what actions we want to do and what's meaningful to us, who are the people that are most important to us, and the activities that give us a sense of responsibility and the places that are most meaningful to us, and spend time on the traditions and the customs and the places that bring us joy and comfort. For some people, that means embracing religion. But for other people, it's connecting to something larger than themselves that doesn't have to be religion. That can be science or nature, or connecting more to their own family or their own community or some greater cause. But making conscious decisions about what's most important to us. And so we work a lot in helping people reconnect to the sources that nourish them and helping them go to that, those sources at this point, and facing that threat that comes up really helps people to do that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm thinking of your background in psychoanalysis and and now with Zen and DBT. And how does all of that come together for you as a psychoanalyst?
It totally does. One of the pieces that you learn in Zen and Marcia talks about is that really the great wisdoms of the world, like living meaningfully, if you will, are known in all traditions, whether the tradition is Zen or DBT or psychoanalysis. And basically, when you get down to it, we all want the same things, and all of those traditions speak to the same thing. We use different words, but Marcia and I had to really kind of battle out, you know, are we talking different language? We may be using different language, but we're talking about the same words. And when Marcia taught in her Zen retreats, sometimes, and Marcia is, has a very strong Christian background, she would teach the same concept and say, you can use the word unconscious. You can use the word mindfulness. You could, when you're talking about something greater, the wisdom may come from Buddha, or it may be coming from Christ. You know, different religions bring different ways, but that the great truths are all there, and it's just used in different languages. And it was wonderful for me to write with Marcia and realize it helped us distill some of the great wisdom that is there, and it's just used in different languages.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I really like that. Well, is there anything else that you would like to put out here while you have the opportunity to do it? For example, how people might, where they might find your book, any websites that you have, et cetera?
Sure. So we have a website called copingwithcancer.com. And if people go on that, we are in the process of developing a virtual training for this, because when you read the book and know the DBT skills, people often, it's hard to just read it and have it. They require practice. So definitely, that we're going to be doing ongoing training to give people a deeper dive into how to use these skills. And that will be both for cancer patients, their loved ones, and for professionals who want to be using these techniques for people with cancer. So if you register on that website and put your name in there, as this curriculum is being rolled out, we'll be in touch with you.
Okay, well, that sounds great. Well, Elizabeth Cohn-Stuntz, I want to thank you for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you for having me.
My guest, Elizabeth Cohn-Stuntz, co-wrote with Dr. Marcia Linehan the book we've been discussing in today's interview. The title of that book, once again, is Coping with Cancer, DBT Skills to Manage Your Emotions and Balance Uncertainty with Hope. In this interview, I was surprised to discover that Marcia Linehan went on to deepen her interest in Zen to the extent of officially becoming a Zen master in 2012. In fact, Marcia Linehan Roshi heads a Zen community known as the Empty Cloud Sangha, where she also leads silent meditation retreats. You can find information about the organization and the retreats at emptycloudsangha.org. My own 2007 interview with her was conducted through my Wise Counsel podcast series. It was a really good interview, and I was especially pleased to land one with someone of her stature even back then. You can find both the interview and a complete transcript by going to tinyurl.com/ZFOWZVH. Once again, that's tinyurl.com/ZFOXOSCARWHISKEYZVICTORHOTEL. While on Google, I also discovered that Roshi Linehan has published a personal memoir titled Building a Life Worth Living. I'm pleased to say that the Stunts Linehan collaboration has resulted in an excellent handbook for dealing with the immediate shock and aftermath of a cancer diagnosis. Its value is not limited to those suffering with cancer. Readers suffering from the fear and anxiety provoked by the pandemic and global warming also stand to benefit. The title, once again, is Coping with Cancer: DBT Skills to Manage Your Emotions and Balance Uncertainty with Hope.
Hello, Dr. Dave. This is Morgan Adolfsen from Norway, clinical psychologist. I've been a long-time listener to both Wise Counsel and Shrink Wrap Radio. Today, I'm so happy that I pressed the donate button. So from this day, I will regularly contribute to support your shows, and I really appreciate your work, Dave. So good luck. Thank you.
Thank you, Morgan Adolfsen, clinical psychologist there in Norway, for being a longtime listener and financial supporter of Shrink Wrap Radio. And thanks also to all of our regular longtime donors. It warms my heart each time I'm looking at the honor roll on our site, and I feel so supported by you faithful friends. And you know who you are. Time once again to shrink wrap it up. Thanks again to psychoanalyst Elizabeth Stuntz, co-author with Dr. Marcia Linehan, for discussing their book, Coping with Cancer: DBT Skills to Manage Your Emotions and Balance Uncertainty with Hope. My guest next week will be Melanie McGee, LCSW, founder of Acceptance and Integration Training, an approach to alleviating psycho-emotional pain while contributing to spiritual well-being. According to McGee, it is a non-narrative, ahistorical model designed to efficiently resolve clients presenting problems while supporting them in cultivation of their steadiness. So I hope you'll join us next week. And until then, this is Dr. Dave reminding you to be kind to yourself and others.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.